This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Ukraine crisis. I welcome Paul Gregory of the Hoover Institution, writing most recently on the challenges for Ukraine after the predation of Russia. The first challenge has to do with what can NATO do, what will NATO do in order to help Ukraine and in order to help the people of Eastern Europe who are now threatened by an aggressor that has no limits. Paul, a very good evening to you. You point to the significant change of the weather for all of Europe since the end of the Second War. That is the Chancellor of Germany, Mr. Scholz, saying that Ostpolitik was no longer useful and he is now going in a new direction. It chiefly, right at this moment, means rearming or arming more Germany, committing more money, building up a professional force, and taking a lead throughout the NATO nations of dealing with the threat of Russia. What does that mean for Ukraine? What does it mean for Europe? Good evening, Paul.
Good evening, John. What the new Chancellor Scholz did was to overturn 60 years of social democratic policy, namely Ostpolitik, which is accommodation with Russia, talking with Russia, doing business with Russia, trying to find mutual gains from cooperation. That's out the window. And he threw it out the window in the Bundestag with the audience full and all of the parties were represented, and his various points in throwing out Ostpolitik were met with applause and even probably for the first time in history in German parliament, standing ovation is quite remarkable.
The three members of what is called the Weimar Triangle, the foreign minister of Germany, Annalena Baerbock, and the foreign minister of France and the foreign minister of Poland, have within these last hours stood together, pledging a united commitment about Ukraine. Is that also significant, Paul, that three countries that were enemies are now allies in the fight?
It's clearly symbolic. I'm not paying a lot of attention to symbolism. I'm paying attention to what's going on the ground and in financial markets. And what I gather from the financial markets is that the sanctions are indeed biting. They are stronger than I had ever anticipated, particularly the sanctioning of the central bank. Financial markets in Russia are in turmoil as everyone who holds Russian debt is trying to cash in on it, and nothing is being honored at this point, and the ruble is collapsing. So we know clearly what's going on in financial markets because they are quite visible. Less apparent is what is going on in Ukraine itself. There's a long column of tanks approaching. It seems to be like one of these slow hurricanes approaching. They start and they stop. Apparently they're short of food or fuel. I don't know. What is clear on the ground is that Putin's expectations have not been fulfilled. He expected white flags. He expected to be cheering crowds welcoming Russian troops who are going to save them from this Nazi Jewish president they have. So that's out the window.
The president tonight addressing the nation and the world, certainly 330 million people of the European Union, the 44 million people of Ukraine, the 100 million or more people of Russia will be listening keenly to the president's remarks. In your essay for Defining Ideas, you center on energy. What do you need to hear about from the president about energy that will contribute to success in Eastern Europe?
Well, I write that if Scholz can overturn a 60-year Ostpolitik policy, that President Biden can easily go back to drill, baby, drill. If you look at the sanctions, they have an exception which allows energy customers, primarily in Europe, to pay for the oil and gas they are receiving. This is a significant exception. So if oil is $100 a barrel, this means that he will be paid for deliveries at the price of $100 a barrel. So getting the United States back into the mode of drilling and exploring and transporting and building pipelines and that, we're not talking about $100 oil, we're talking about $60 oil. So this is really Putin's last lifeline, the money that he's getting from Europe for the oil and gas. So if the U.S. were to preempt him in this market, he would lose that lifeline.
The columnists in London are especially harsh on Russia and on its leadership. One columnist naming Putin as isolated, paranoid, obsessive, and angry. That's emphasized in the late reporting from London, angry. Question is, what does his anger translate into? At this point, Paul, how do you measure Europe's remarks following this invasion? Is Europe stronger today? Is Europe making gestures? Is Europe finding a way to signal it will do more but not doing more? What is your opinion?
It's very hard to say. Putin, as in the 2014 invasion of Ukraine, created the Ukrainian state. In his invasion of Ukraine, he has reinvigorated or almost recreated NATO. So in that sense, he's made a terrible blunder. There's a famous story of Putin and being backed into a corner by a rat. And his statement, if you're backed into a corner, you have to fight your way out. So the concern is he will engage in atrocities. These will be against the Ukrainian people. So that's the major concern. The biggest thing being discussed right now is a no-fly zone. And I think there is justification for a no-fly zone to protect Ukraine's nuclear power plants. The Russians have targeted these nuclear power plants, and we don't know what they have in mind with respect to these nuclear power plants. So having a no-fly zone simply to protect those nuclear plants, I think, might be sellable.
The Prime Minister of Great Britain making a quick tour of Poland and Estonia, maybe other countries, but I saw him on land in both countries, was asked about a no-fly zone, and he said no, because that would put up NATO forces against Russian forces and trigger an escalation. That's today's explanation. Do you expect that to change, Paul, in the event that Russia escalates with artillery fire and rockets on civilian populations?
This is under heated discussion. My own view is there is merit to not having the no-fly zone, because it's really a challenge with against a rogue leader whose sanity is not 100% sure. So in that sense, I would probably not do it. If we had word that they intended to do something with those nuclear power plants, then I think we have a much stronger argument.
Paul Gregory, the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at Defining Ideas about the crisis in Ukraine, waiting for the president's remarks on energy. This is Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.